Guys, what's up? This episode is brought to you by DMTW. It's our buddies that we're working with. Don't Make This Weird. Those guys are awesome. It's a lifestyle brand that we are currently working with. We have our first product, a playmat, that looks super sweet. We just got it in.
You want to see pictures? Go to our Instagram. You can check that out.
Yeah, and we'll have a full on like picture, I think, with us and the playmat or something very soon. We're going to be promoting that. Some other new products we're working on with those guys, and they are working with us to create video content that will be happening very soon. So check that out, DMTW Clothing, DMTW.com, I believe, is the website. And once again, thanks to those guys for being awesome and helping us do this. Let's get to the episode.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered. For you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? We're dealing with the straight-up Comic-Con hangover. We're,
I was jokingly say both of our names just really wrong, but I decided it's been too long to...
Yeah.
But that was the joke. It's been so long that I forgot our names.
It's been...
It's
going
to be like, it's been Alex... Kostler and
yeah,
Bon Batman.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been so long. I never would have thought taking 2 weeks off I would feel so disconnected from the podcast.
So since Pokemon Go,
yeah,
which has been a cultural movement since we last released our episode,
I've
been in 9 different cities and 6 states.
And how many Pokemon have you caught?
I can actually check that.
Oh, Lord, you're going
to
dignify
Pokemon Go might be one of the best things that ever happened to me, being stuck in an airport for work for 6 to 12 hours straight.
Right.
It happened twice on this last trip has ever happened.
I have effusively ignored and avoided it.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all. We'll probably do an episode, like post-credit episode.
On why I hate Pokemon Go? No,
on Pokemon Go.
I don't hate it.
About it.
I don't hate it. I've just tried to...
But you're so about athleticism. This is the best gym I've ever been a part of, Ben.
Yeah, it's just...
I'll tell you how many kilometers I've walked also with the information I'm going to give you.
Can we get back on track?
Wait. No, I have to tell... I've caught 1,043 Pokemon.
It's good.
And I have walked, I think, 74 kilometers.
Excellent. Good work.
You know how many kilometers I've walked in the last year...
Doesn't this qualify
without Pokemon Go existing?
Doesn't this qualify on the talk about things at the end of the episode
3.
Bracket? All right, I'm taking over as lead host. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, and this is the Masters of Modern podcast. We're back after a couple weeks off. Comic Con was a great
time.
That was
the joke I was going to make during announcement. I was going to call it the Masters of Pokemon Go, and then
yeah,
move on. All right, so we're doing top 10. So many things have happened since we've been gone.
Yeah,
banned restricted list announcement. Nothing got banned.
Nothing happened,
which was not surprising.
No, nope.
We went to Comic Con, which there's a bunch of cool stories about. Comic-Con,
man.
We can talk about,
Comic-Con,
but we're not going to do that today.
No, maybe that should be our end of cast off.
Yeah, if there's
off
time.
Topic.
And then we're Eternal Eldritch Moon came out. You know, this is sad. So I want people to take a little bit of this review because I use this generally to review, like, get a feel for the cards.
Right.
This is the first pre-release I've missed since M10.
I think I might actually be in the same boat as you. I know that there was one pre-release at one point that I had to play like a Sunday afternoon sealed and only play 2 rounds of it because
right.
I had something going on. But I always have gone, bought the pack, got the spin down.
Yeah.
At least, even when I've missed like entire draft environments, I've always gone to the pre-release.
Right.
Every time.
I mean, my girlfriend moved to Atlanta, so I was moving her. And literally, we were moving her in, and it was like the last weekend I would see her for a month.
My brother
and
got
a half,
married.
And
so
like,
I
was kind of
just
like... I had no good excuse to go play Eldritch Moon.
My brother got married, so I had to go to Seattle, and that was... I mean, Seattle's got a lot of good magic, but it just wasn't really the appropriate
right.
moment. Hey, and bro, I kind of missed the rehearsal dinner. There's a pre-release running long.
The brunch know. That you know we have to go to the next day. But Eldritch Moon...
Is it Eldritch? I thought it was Eldritch.
Eldritch, whatever. I'm going to say Eldritch probably forever, and people are going to tweet me and be like, you're saying it wrong, and it bugs me, and they're going to have to deal with it.
You've been saying things wrong since we started this podcast.
Yeah, so my favorite card in the set is Sage Rhino, followed by Sage of Epitir.
Sage Rhino, so confusing.
Siege of Epitir.
All right, guys, before
but
we
this
get...
set is really deep. I want to just talk about generally
yeah, this
about the set.
Set's awesome. I do want to say before we get started, of course, that the Twitter is on, that the podcast is on Twitter at the MMCast. You guys are very interactive, and I think we're like approaching 2,500 now,
yeah.
which is pretty sweet,
yeah.
Which is cool. And then also we're on Twitter. I'm Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kess Wiley.
And
if you want to come at me about some Pokemon Go.
Yeah,
I might even start it. I might do a bonus episode without you.
Leave
might have
the Pokemon Go alone. You're just trying to hijack this cast right now. And then we're on Patreon. That's the other thing. Oh, actually, we have a sister podcast. That's really more important, honestly. Yeah. Jimmy and Josh do the Command Zone. It's awesome. Jimmy's been doing awesome stuff with Wizards.
Yeah, yeah.
He did like the whole...
He was the face of spoiler season.
Yeah, he was doing all the interviews with like Mero and everybody. It was really cool. But yeah, and then we do a Patreon where if you guys donate a little bit of money to our fund, we can like continue to buy gear,
do
cool
little
stuff,
cool things,
give things away.
Yep.
And yeah, fun stuff. So
and then, oh, and we have an Instagram. Really, technically, if you just look up the MMCast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, even YouTube to a certain extent, you'll find us. YouTube is slightly different, but we are releasing videos on YouTube, so go subscribe to that channel.
You may be wondering why on earth the MMCast doesn't yet have a Snapchat if Kessler has 6 hours of time to kill in airports.
I don't have
an answer for you.
I don't know how to talk about myself on video. That's not like... Basically, I have Snapchat, but I pretty much exclusively use it to send me pretending to be toast to my girlfriend on as a filter.
I don't understand it either, so it's okay.
It's the it's a filter app.
Yeah.
That has chat. I don't know.
Okay. People are no longer entertained with
this.
Yeah,
all right.
Let's get
this
set.
Top 10 list. All right. So I guess before we talk about the top 10 list, first thing, this set's crazy deep. There's like a lot. There are at least two. I cheated and technically have like a weird section beforehand, but there's even cards that I just didn't include, but I will be talking about when I talk about similar cards.
There's the cards that didn't make my list are so sweet. Like
we're going to do like normally we save our five honorable mention battles for stuff like top 10 blue cards or top 10 cards from a set from or like a block where there's a lot more cards in there. This time around, I have five cards to battle off as a like honorable mentions battle that we'll do probably towards the end of the episode. If
there's just a lot of really interesting cards. Normally on my top tens, I try to go with the things that I think are sweetest.
Sure.
So like the emerge cards, just like the 3-4 flyer that draws a card or something. It would be a card like that where I would be like, oh, but you can do it's so good. But like I tried to pick cards that I thought actually for the most part had a place, like would actually fit into modern for the most part in my top 10 as opposed to just the cards I thought were the sweetest.
Sure.
But it definitely was hard. I mean, the rest of my list, I have 20 honorable mentions I have to pick five from. So why don't we start with our 10?
Wait. Okay. So before we get to the 10, because there's an entire set of cards that I didn't include on my list that also aren't in my five honorable mentions.
Okay.
And these are the tribal cards. And you might have some on your list, but
the Vampire Lord, the
Spirit Curse
Catcher. So
there's the one drop Spirit Curse Catcher. There's the Vampire Lord. There's the zombie one drop one black zombie that you can tap three zombies
shaper.
To draw three cards, and it has other abilities. So I didn't include any of them because here's the deal: if a tribe Bull deck in modern exists for one of those cards, all of those will be four ofs across the board. So when it comes down to it, but if there's no tribal deck for that, if that deck doesn't actually pull through the tribal deck, they won't see any play. And it was really hard for me to include those and give some of the more unique cards time of day. So ahead of time, before we get into our top 10 list, I'm cheating and saying all three of those cards like could see play in modern, but it's purely based on if those tribal deck work. But all three of them will see play in those tribal decks if those decks become actual decks. Vampires, zombies, even there are humans, and werewolves is the one that I have the less hope in.
Yeah.
But there's definitely human cards that also human tribal cards that are also like if there's a human what's the goblin cards from back in the day and elf cards that it comes into play and then you look at the top four cards and you get all the cards of that type. Like there's a human version of that now. So like there's definitely cards for every tribe that could see play in modern, but it's purely based on the tribe and I don't want to spend slots on that in my top 10 list.
Yeah, fully. And for the record, I didn't put any of those three cards onto my list either. Are you going to fight any of them in your honorable mentions?
No, none of them.
Okay,
neither. Yeah.
So quickly, we'll talk about them just to get them out of the way before we do our top 10. But I would say that of the three, the one that I think I have the least faith in being good in modern is the zombie.
Sure.
I think it's pretty like cost intensive to get it to work. And it's just to draw a card is what the real payoff is. It's cool you can get a zombie out of it, but like
I guess the reason it's exciting from my perspective is the grave crawler effect where you have a lot of zombies are cards that very quickly get outclassed by a Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
And now you have a use for those zombies that
definitely
allows you to kind of grind out a bigger set of cards into play.
Yeah, I mean the fact that you have the grave crawler, you can be discarding Relentless Dead. Like you have some good abilities with that card. It just feels a little underpowered. And the problem is when you do a 1/1 for one in a tribe that doesn't have a number of playable lords, it's a little tough because
you're 1/1 for one. I don't agree with you.
So that's that one. I would say of the other two, I think from a pure power perspective, the tribe that I keep hearing you buzz about that I'm actually brewing myself is Spirits.
Sure.
The Curse Catcher card in that deck, it's awkward. It doesn't actually fit the way that you would want it to fit traditionally. Because
I think that's because the deck you're working on is different than everyone else's.
No. I think like traditionally, if you were going to build a Spirits deck, you would want to have like some element of like counter magic or control. Like I think that's kind of what you would want. So a card that pluses up and gets better when you play other spirits at sorcery speed for the most part is not that good, because it's always going to just basically be power of one, unless you get like the Lord down. So, and then I think the third one is the vampire, which I've heard the least buzz about, but if you were going to build just a straight aggressive vampire deck, I think actually maybe has the most potential. So anyway, I think, and the other cool detail about the Vampire Lord is that because of the discard ability, you can get really clever and interesting with madness things.
Well, and that's the point. Like the brewing I've done with vampires, because I've done, like, as you seem to be focused on spirits, I like kind of took a crack at vampires over the last couple, and that card specifically does a lot of, like, that deck is now a madness deck.
Yep.
Like there are enough cards that benefit you so heavily for madness that there's no reason not to take advantage of it, and if you're taking advantage of that, that discard, that Lord is very good, and a two mana Lord anyways is good. So like, I'm definitely on board there.
Something that I think they seem to be learning more and more is that pushing old tribes and like giving you like pretty aggressive cards on curve to make those tribes interesting or fun, something that players really like.
Right.
And it's cool to see. I like it. It's nice to see.
In Modern, Merfolk was focused on pretty much twice, and it's a deck. Elves has been focused pretty much three times, and it's a deck.
Yeah.
Vampires now has been focused on about three or four times,
yep,
and it's getting there. Spirits has been focused around three or four times, so it's getting there. Zombies is just kind of always around, and so it might eventually get enough pieces. Werewolves has only been focused on twice, and humans is another, like, kind of just always been around. So, like, we're definitely getting to the point where there is definitely... these Innistrad tribes are getting close to what the classic tribes kind of have always had the support of.
Definitely. So that being said, let's get into our top 10.
Yeah. All right. So my number 10, or your number 10.
I went with my number 10, and it's the paired card. It's Hanwar Battlements, Hanwar Garrison.
Okay.
So I think it's fair to call that one slot.
I'll let you cheat here. No, that's fine.
That's fair. I mean, it's like what we do with the charms or things like that.
I think you got it.
It's the land and the 2/3. So the land itself is a flip land, and it comes in untapped. It taps for one colorless.
Sure.
One red and tap it. Target creature gains haste until end of turn. That's all you need for this card to be playable. I mean, that right there is actually good.
Like, sure. It's not amazing. The cards you're picking are also my two picks for 100% made for constructed, especially in standard. But I can see where that card specifically...
Yeah,
has reasons to see play in Modern.
Anybody that has ever brewed in Modern has tried to play the legendary Kamigawa land that lets you pit.
Loses through life. And that card's like, I think, $15 purely off of people trying to brew with it in Modern. So, definitely.
And that's the thing people have tried to build forever. This card's better. So the second ability is red 3, tap it. If you control and own both Hanwar Battlements and the other card, which is Hanwar Garrison, exile them and turn them into the Writhing Township, which the Writhing Township... I will now read and explain.
7/5 that makes 2/3/2s.
It's so. I guess before we talk about the transformed card, we should talk about Hanwar Garrison, which is the other card
you have to have. The 3/2, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 2/3 human soldier for a red and two. Whenever Hanwar Garrison attacks, put 2/1/1 red human creatures on the battlefield tapped and attacking. Not a bad card.
No.
Modern, it's a little dicey because it's a 2/3/3, which is like, you don't really want to be playing that with Lightning Bolt running around, but it's fine. And like, if you get to untap with it, you get quite a bit of value. Add to that the fact that if you have the land and you can then flip them, it's a 7/4 trample haste that when it attacks puts 2/3/2 colorless Eldrazi creatures on the battlefield tapped and attacking. Like, that's really good.
I think if you're playing a red deck that is already playing the Hanawire Battlements, playing a one of or two of the
Garrison.
The Garrison, because the card's not exceptionally Modern playable.
No, it's fine.
Alongside the land, it definitely gets that bonus in power level, and it's a fine card in Modern. It's not great. It dies a Lightning Bolt. It's like, there's a card that I think you have on your list that I didn't include on mine that we're going to talk about my problems with 3-mana cards that died a Lightning Bolt. and that's an issue, but from that perspective, there is enough of a benefit to trying to, like, literally the curve of 1-drop something, 2-drop something, 3-drop this, attack, land, transform on turn 5 is insane. Like, you deal with a total of one card and a land, 18 damage, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4 plus 13. So that's 17 damage by itself. So and if you're red, you have a Lightning Bolt. So that's like a one card kill combo by itself.
Yeah, it's super good.
So like, not ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's like totally... That's why it's my number 10. There are a lot of cards that I could have put on that are more interesting. The power level of those two cards, just because the land is so good, it was like, all right, maybe. So that's my number 10. What's your number 10?
So mine's a little wonkier, actually, but mine's Lunar Force.
Really? In modern?
Yeah. So it's one blue, two colorless. When an opponent casts a spell, sacrifice Lunar Force and counter that spell. The reason I like it is versus something like Cancel, which is comparable, theoretically.
Is it because of Sun Titan? Is that why you like it?
Well, yes, but beyond that. and that's not what I would do it with in a modern. I might do that in other formats. But the fact that you can tap out for it and then it immediately says your opponent can't do anything without wasting a spell, which they have to do, and they can do to kind of mess with this to stop you. But versus Cancel, where like the problem with Cancel is you have to then on turn three leave mana open, and it's only really good on turn five when you can leave mana open and play another spell. This, you just put it down on turn three, and then from that point on, your opponent, without you losing any momentum or speed, is stuck wasting a spell.
It's yet another card that,
wasting a turn.
And it's yet another card that pushes Zerdex in Modern, which is sick.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. That's very true. Sweet, no, right? And like, and there's enchantment's important. Like, there's a bunch of different stuff that kind of do cool stuff with it. Like playing Tarmogoyf on turn two and this on turn three, and then just like forcing your opponent to deal with both.
Yeah.
Sounds like very deep, like completely serviceable as a card.
Seems dicey to me in Modern. I can't really imagine wanting to do it.
It is my number 10. Like, yeah. I did put it at the top, but I can see this from just the perspective of kind of the reason Spellskite is good. A card that you can cast and then it sits there and your opponent has to work around it before they can do anything is definitely really interesting.
I'm fascinated by this card in my near-death experience deck for Highlander, just for the record.
I mean, it's a sweet card. It's a card we don't have in Modern. And it's kind of the same reason I like the like one red shock, but it's an enchantment that sits in play.
Seal of Fire, yeah.
Seals, because like once you put it in play, it's there and your opponent has to always worry about it. And this is theoretically worse.
It also is a really strong, better. It's a strong card for getting Delirium active. It's a
right.
Yeah, I mean, it costs three though, but anyway, I hear you. I think it's interesting. My number 9 is none other than Wild Mongrel. I mean, Noose Constrictor.
Okay, mine's higher. But I have Noose on my list.
This card's really good.
We talked about why Modern needs a free discard outlet for days, and then they reprinted Wild Mongrel with a more relevant
ability. Yeah, for sure, more relevant ability.
Reach is more important than color, especially Modern, where like pro red or pro black, no one's playing Doomblade.
Yeah,
which is like the one card I can see where this is the color changing is relevant in Modern versus Reach, which stops Lingering Souls tokens. The fact that this can discard Lingering Souls.
No, like, this card's really good.
My problem, you know, I've played a lot of Dredge lists where I'm playing, what's his face?
Lunar Sprawler?
No. The Grave. Not Grave. Lotlit Troll.
Oh, Lotlit Troll.
And the problem with Lotlit Troll is always kind of like, it's great with creatures, but it's like you can't discard spells.
Yeah.
And not being able to discard spells can be a huge hindrance. And especially if you're playing stuff like Lingering Souls or some different flashback spells that you just want to get in your graveyard. Noose Constrictor is much stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer it if it put a counter on Noose Constrictor, but that is what it is.
Well, I mean, it'd be too good. Wild Mongrel was too good, and this is arguably slightly better.
So those of you that are wondering what we're talking about, it's one green, one colorless for a 2/2 snake with reach. Discard a card, Noose Constrictor gets +1/+1 till end of turn. The reason this is on here, very simply, if you didn't listen to those episodes, is that when you look for abilities in Modern that allow you to discard cards for free, without a cost, without a tap, no summoning sickness concerns. They're very rare to come by. They don't exist. Zombie infestation.
There are none under 2 mana.
No, we talk about zombie infestation on here a lot because like that's one of the few.
But that costs 2 cards, which is a whole other kind of slew of problems.
Yeah.
And the value you get at like being able to do one is very important, especially because of madness cards, because of dredge cards.
Yeah, I mean, you end up talking about cards. Una's Prowler, which is like an entertaining card, but actually awful. Like you don't want to let your opponent shrink its power. So like, this is just a better card. This is just, it's cleaner, it's simpler, it's better color-wise. Like, it's good. So, Noose Constrictor is my number 9. Yep.
Plus, it's a creature, so it gets Vengevine back. But, moving on. My number 9 is our preview card, Whispers of Emrakul.
Okay, I put mine a little higher.
For people that didn't listen to our preview episode, this is one black, one colorless. Target opponent discards a card at random. If you have Delirium, they discard 2 cards at random. We talked a lot about this on the podcast. This is Hymn to Tauruk with Delirium on board, which I don't think is too difficult to do.
Definitely not.
Think this is a card. It's a fixed version of Hymn to Tauruk, just from the perspective of it's much harder to do this on turn two. So it's not going to be used as often to mana screw your opponent as Hymn to Tauruk often could be used for. But other than on turn two, Hymn to Tauruk is best on turn four, where you're hitting the only three spell, you know, hit getting rid of some of the most important spells in their hand. So like,
yeah, and also, you know, it's like if it's a, depending on what deck this fits into, whether you're slotting this into a value deck like an Abzan or a Jund, or if you're going to try to play this in a dedicated eight rack deck, the first one's good, the second one's backbreaking. So
right,
if you have, you know, you start with two of these in your hand, like you probably, I mean, even just two cards. Even just two cards for three of theirs at random is enough.
Right.
So you don't even need to go two and two. You can just go one and two.
Like, sure.
You know, it's you'll lose a little tempo by paying two for it instead of one for it early, maybe. But you also might just get their best card.
Right.
It's, yeah, it's I agree. A card at
a
random.
A one for one play or a.
Yeah.
One, like doing it on turn two where you're getting one of their cards at random is not going to be the worst thing. It's not going to be the best thing, but it's not going to be the worst thing. And when you actually get to that delirium factor, it's amazing.
It's also not...
The Tark is one of the best cards ever printed in Magic.
It's also, just keep in mind, I mean, this is one detail that is like, I don't know how much we talked about it, but just for those of you that are used to like Thoughtseize and Inquisition and thinking this is just like the randomized version of two, you play this, it's a card at random. It's not reveal their hand in a non-land card. You could hit their land.
Right. Well, that's why Hymn to Tark was, yeah.
If they start with two lands in hand, they play one, you play this on turn two, and you get lucky, and you hit their second land, you could just win the game off
right.
that. I mean,
right.
It's outrageous. So, like, this is not an effect that we have that much of, especially at two mana, and I think it's very good.
Right. I mean, and beyond that, they don't print target player discards two cards for two mana, period.
Yeah.
So, yep. Like, the fact that it's random, yeah, there's so many beneficial things to this card.
Card's really good.
Okay, what's your number eight?
Okay, so my number eight's a little bit of a stretch. This is where things start to get kind of weird, and I feel like I have a strong sense of how good this card could be, but I don't know. It's Decimator of the Provinces. This is an Emerge card. So it's 10 mana for a 7/7 Trample Haste. When you cast Decimator of Provinces, creatures you control get +2/+2 and gain Trample until end of turn. So it's kind of like that... Oh, and then it has Emerge, which is the most important part. Its Emerge cost is green, 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 6. You may cast a spell by sacrificing a creature and paying the Emerge cost reduced by that creature's converted mana cost. Essentially, if you have like a 4-drop or a 3-drop, you sack it, take that off the cost. So if this you have a 3-drop, this will cost you 6. If you have a 4-drop, this will cost you 5, which is probably right around the time you're thinking of casting it. I would imagine you probably are curving this off of like a beefy 3 or 4. And at that point, you probably have a board of giant green things because you're some sort of green stompy deck. And it's when you cast it as well, not when it enters the battlefield, which is insane because they can counter it. It still works. You
right.
still get the bonus.
Right, right.
It reminds me of that one card. What was the... There was the
Crater
card
of Behemoth.
Yeah, Crater of Behemoth.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one.
So here's and I have one on my list because my plan was kind of to talk about all of them. But the Emerge cards... How many times have we said cost reduction mechanics are always good?
Always.
I can't think of a single cost reduction mechanic that didn't see some amount of heavy constructive play.
And then over time, people weren't like, oh, this is better than I thought.
Yeah. And this is one of them. I think this one definitely has some homes. I think in any deck that's going wide with creatures, this deck and has something like it has to be a little bit mid-rangey because getting this in Elves seems... Okay.
Right.
But this in something like Collecting Company seems very good because just even off of a, you know, 4-drop creature that you already gained value off of, this
right.
is going to go pretty far. I think the triple green is a problem on this one. I mean, if I was to pick between the different Emerge cards,
yeah.
this was obviously a strong one, but I also think a little bit more geared towards slightly different formats than Modern. It's obviously strong. Like, there's obviously things you can do with this. And all the Emerge cards, and be to, like I don't know for sure which one's going to be the most backbreaking. I picked the one that I like the most, but I think any of them, like, and I don't think you have this, like the 3/4 flyer that draws you a card with flying.
It was on my honorable mentions.
Is like
really good.
Is just a card that's probably really good.
Yeah,
and that's by like that's one of the common ones. So like, this is an insane mechanic that it, like people are definitely underrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this card, what I imagine is some sort of green stompy deck that probably gets away with playing Nykthos, because if you have like the 4/5 for 3, what's that thing called from Worldwake? The green 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 for a 4/5. What's that thing called?
Green green green
Wooly
for a 4/5. Raid. Oh yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Raid, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what it's called.
It's one. Yeah, so
it's a Baeloth.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Baeloth. So you have like that card. You have some of these other some of these other cards that are heavy on green. With Nykthos, like you may be able to just like Nykthos this thing out without even sacrificing
right.
anything.
Right, and in response to your Creator of Behemoth comment, The reason this might be better is because Crater Hoop Behemoth only worked when you cheats it in the play somehow. This sometimes you can cast.
Right.
It, like Crater Hoof, like sometimes you can just cast it, but sometimes you can cheat it into play with the emerge cost. So there's so many different versatile moments that you can get this into play.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like an interesting deck, I think, that can be made with this card. Yeah,
I don't disagree.
And yeah, it seems good. So that's my number 8, Decimator of the Provinces.
Like looking at my list and looking at like the best cards in the set, and I only have one emerge card on my list, there's 4 different cards that you could argue are cost reduction cards.
Yeah. I mean, look.
And like one that's an epic ramp spell.
You could like absolutely argue that in the end, that the emerge cards from the set will be like the equivalent of the delve cards from cons. And we're just going to find out over time as people try different ones out. I mean, people are even talking about playing Temporal Trespass in Modern now. That's like a year later.
The gain extra turn?
Yeah.
Well, no, that was seeing play in the Oops All Turns decks.
I mean, I'm seeing it in Delver decks
now.
Oh,
sure,
people
sure.
People are like, that card might just actually be better than we thought.
That's not surprising.
It's always what happens with these things. I mean, you really might
Look at Phyrexian Mana. How many Phyrexian Mana spells haven't seen play?
Yeah, eventually, like every one of them.
Even Slash Panther.
Like,
and that's, I mean, like once you get to the 5 mana, you know, dirtily ones, like obviously you get a little bit less, but some of them have seen play in Vintage.
I've done the thing before where I've like in like mono blue decks, I've played like a copy of Postmortem Lunge and I play it against someone and they're like, what is that card? And I'm like, well, it's essentially a colorless card that lets me bring back a lord with haste. So I can bring back a Merfolk Lord in my deck for 2 mana.
No, they're like any type of free mechanic, you start getting into very interesting spaces.
Yeah.
All right, my number 8?
Yep.
My 8. Fortune's Favor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love this card. Huh. So it's 3 colorless, an instant, which is the key. target opponent looks at the top 4 cards of your library and separates them into a face-down pile and a face-up pile. Put one pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard. Obviously, this is a very similar card to...
to your one from Eternal Masters you like so much?
Factor Fiction.
And all the other versions.
And all the other versions that they've tried to print. And the ones that they tried to print haven't been good, but part of the reason they haven't been good is because your opponent picks which pile you get. Even though you don't know what that face down pile is, there's so much information you get from watching your this comes with the ability to watch your opponent and see what they're thinking and doing, the way they put the card side by side, the decision process they go through. Like, it takes more people reading, but this card is not as good as Factor because it's 4 versus 5, but it's still very close. And picking, you know, if they put a face up card and it's just one. Yes, sometimes you'll blow yourself out and pick, and it'll just be 3 lands.
Yeah.
But I've definitely played a control deck where I want to just draw 3 lands off the top of my deck. So, like, if you're playing a deck that's good enough, an instant speed card draw spell like this is something I think control has kind of wanted for a while. And this is a card I'm very excited for.
I think this is a cool card. I think you're underrating the fact that, like,
Or overrating.
Yeah, but I think you're overrating it because I think you're underrating the amount of time that they're going to go 2 and 2 and you're going to not really be like, you're going to be like, and then you're going to take the face down pile because you're not that happy with the face up pile and you're going to just bone yourself.
Well, but if I'm not happy with the face up pile and I take the face down pile and it's worse than the face up pile, fine. But I wasn't happy with either. That means I just got a bad 4.
I guess
most of the time I'm either going to dislike the face up and pick the face down, or I'm just going to take the face up pile.
Okay, but like, how many decks these days play Gifts Ungiven? Because I will say...
This is better than Gifts Ungiven. I think. That's a strong statement.
That's a strong
This is better than Gifts Ungiven in a deck that's not trying to put stuff, tutor stuff into their graveyard.
I hear
you. If you take away that side of the story, but part of that is also, not like, that's a card that works better in a deck that's trying to reanimate something versus this that's trying to just have more cards in their hand that are going to be able to prevent their opponent from doing stuff.
Right. I mean, I get your point. I think this card's weird and wonky, and it's going to be very hard to make work. But I mean, the fact that I'm a little confused by it.
Sure. I guess my point is, Gifts Ungiven is an engine card.
Yeah.
This is a like one of the 2 card draw card that will just be in a control deck that will sometimes just gain them the value they need to keep going and stop their opponent from doing stuff.
It's fair. All right, that's yours. So that is your number 7.
So like this is better in Delver, for instance, where like card quality doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay, so that's my number 8.
So my number 7 is Nevalia Academy, which is the colorless land here that comes in untapped, and it taps for a colorless. It's an uncommon. It's got sweet art, and it says if a land or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard a card, you may reveal that card and put it on top of your library instead of putting it anywhere else. The fact that this isn't uncommon is bananas to me. I mean, it's an untapped land. It's an untapped colorless land. That means that if they Thoughtseize you, you just don't have to discard the card. Like, this card's really good. This card's really good. I mean, obviously there's a tempo play of you putting the card back on top of your library, but you get to choose. I mean, like, and it's a land. It's just in play.
I one of the reasons I love this card is I love Library of Ling.
Yeah.
And I love, and for a while we've had the land of the your hand size is infinitely large.
Yeah.
And now we have the other half of Library of Ling as a land. So if you get both of them in play,
right,
you can just create a fake Library of Ling. I also think this effect is strong. In Modern, discard is one of the most powerful forms of interaction in the format. We just talked about how one of our top 10 lists is a Hymn to Tark that just got printed, and this land is an answer to that.
Nephalia Academy only allows you to put it on top if it's an opponent causes you to discard. So if you have an infinite hand size and you can't just start putting cards from the top of your... You can't put cards 8 through...
Of your own onto the top of your
library. Because it's not being discarded by an opponent.
I mean, it's not completely library-ling, yeah. But it's a lot of library-ling.
Yeah. my point is, like, thinking about the kind of decks that I like to build, which I know there's a lot of people that like to build these kind of decks that are very, like... I'm trying to get a lot of, like a Mirror Superior kind of a thing. I mean, it's not for this card, but like those kind of decks where you're like, I need two cards in my opening hand to get value in the early turns. But
what Snapcaster? I mean, also just look at like Snapcaster Mage. Or not Snapcaster Mage, sorry. Splinter Twin. I mean, it's gone, but like when Splinter Twin decks, if you had both of those cards, you win. But if they strip it out of your hand, you have a much harder time. Here, you can just put it on top of your deck and then you're just going to win with it.
It just means the kind of thing that you need if you're trying to build some sort of like Torpor Orb where I like don't, you know, that kind of a deck. Some sort of wonky deck where you need two cards to get the value you want. This card is just so good in that deck.
And something that's always kind of underappreciated is sideboard cards that are lands.
Yeah.
Because often against decks, especially decks like Jund, having more lands is important. You want more lands in your deck to be able to fight against them. And having a land that you can bring in to up your land count that also acts as a card that interacts as a spell is really good. It's also, you know, on the opposite end, if you have a land sideboard card, if you don't have to cut any of your regular spells. For decks that are, which are combo decks normally, like Goro's Vengeance decks, where you're so much about having like the exact list of your cards needs to be the exact list, and it's really hard to cut a card because your engine starts dying, this card is great to have in your, you know, have as a replacement for a land, because getting rid of a forest in your engine deck is not as hard, or getting rid of a swamp in your engine deck is not as hard as getting rid of a Goro's Vengeance or a discard outlet or, you know, like all the pieces you need.
Right, right, right. Sure.
Okay, so that's my line. Number seven?
Yep.
That was your number seven.
Yeah, it was my number seven.
My number seven is Noose Constructor.
Okay, you went with the Wild Mongrel.
Yeah, I put it higher.
Anything else you want to say about it?
Dredger Sweet, Dredge Vine. Yeah. It's awesome. This card's really good.
Yeah.
There was one other. There's another card in this set that is comparable. It's not as good, but it's a black and a colorless for a vampire that gains flying when you discard, and it has infinite discards as ability.
Got it.
And something that did not, like in Dredge in Legacy, they play the one drop white that just gets +0/+4 when you discard, purely because a free discard outlet and having 8 of them one drops is really important in Legacy.
I can't remember what that card's called, but I used to know its name.
So for this, you know, for Modern, this is the closest to that. Flying is an okay mechanic. Like, I definitely could use a flyer once in a while.
Yeah.
But the other end is sometimes I've definitely done graveyard decks that don't have red, green.
Sure.
So if the black one is another option. I just wanted to point out that, like, they went from having 0 to 3, basically.
Right.
Available in the format. And I think this is obviously the best one. This has a lot of uses. It's obviously really good. Yeah. I love this card. I wanted this for a while. All right. Number six.
I went with Distended Mindbender, another Emerge card. This card's really nuts. This card is, I think, the most nuts of all of the Emerge cards. This one is 8 mana. I mean, out the gate is only 8 mana. It's a 5/5. Emerge cost of black, and 5. and when you cast Distended Mindbender, target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose from it a non-land card with converted mana cost 3 or less, and a card with converted mana cost 4 or greater. That player discards those cards. You're for 8 mana for a 5/5. You're getting 2 cards from their hand, provided they have.
At worst, you're getting a 5/5 with Inquisition of Kozilek attached.
Yeah,
which is fine.
And you might.
Like, I'm not complaining about that card.
Inquisition of Kozilek and that name of that card that no one played.
Well, or you get Inquisition of Kozilek plus like a Thoughtseize, basically, because you get an additional.
No, what was the name of the card that it had to cost four or more? For, I think it was from Avacyn Restored.
I have no idea.
And no one played it. Anyway.
I would have said it if I knew it 30 seconds ago. But I mean, Twitter, yell at us what card that is.
Just assume that you're playing like something here that has benefit from from sacrificing it, which is like what the Emerge decks will likely be doing.
Sure.
So it's like, let's just say it's a 3-drop. It's a Kitchen Finks.
Well, how much? How much does it cost with Kitchen Finks in play?
So with Kitchen Finks in play, it costs you 4 mana. Like it curves perfectly.
Kitchen Finks into this, 4 mana. You gain 4 life. You have a 2/1 and a 5/5, and they've discarded 2 cards.
It seems insane.
That's really good.
I mean, like any, if you can curve some sort of a...
Especially Modern is moving towards more plus, like 4+ drops. Like Modern has moved away a little bit from the 3-drops or lower only cards.
Right.
So, no, this card's insane. This card's really good. Yeah. All the Emerge, like, if it is a good... I even think the Emerge card that makes 2/1/1 snakes is like something to look at in some decks.
I mean, even imagine this, okay? So let's just say you were going to try to go a turn earlier than that. You didn't want to play turn 4. Mm-hmm. You wanted to be able to play this on turn 3. Is that so? You play turn 1 mana creature into turn 2 3-drop. Into turn 4, you sacrifice your 3-drop and you've generated 4 mana. And you have a turn 4 5/5 that gets a double discard. Even if you don't have the 3-drop and you're just having to sacrifice a mana creature in that deck, because of Emerge, you get to tap the mana creature for mana and then sack it as part of the cost. Like, this thing ends up costing you 5 mana if you have a Birds of Paradise in play.
Right.
That's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
This card is bananas.
Yeah.
It's an insect, an Eldrazi insect.
So,
I'm done.
My number 6.
Yeah.
Also Emerge card. This is my one Emerge card. Mostly because I wanted to just say all of the Emerge cards are nuts when talking about this one Emerge card.
Is it the Mistbind Click?
Yes.
Yeah, I figured you like that card.
So mine's Elder Deep Fiend.
Yeah.
Eldrazi Octopus, which is the most important part. normally costs 8 mana. It has Flash, which is the actual most important part.
Yeah, big time.
For Emerge cost 5 and 2 blue, when you cast Elder Deep Fiend, tap up to 4 target permanents.
So it's different than Mistbind Click, because at Mistbind Click, if they killed your only fairy you were trying to champion, Mistbind Click, for those that don't remember, was a 4/4 flyer for 4 with Flash that you had to exile another fairy you controlled until it left play. But when it entered, you got to tap up to 4 lands.
Right.
And so it's the same kind of thing. You're trying to play it during their upkeep or during their untap step.
I mean, one of the best ways to use it is during their untap step, you tap their 4 lands on turn 4, because you have some creature in play that lets you do that, any 3-drop, and... then you basically time walk them, and then you untap with a 5/5 or 5/6. But and that's just a very strong play. That's
right.
That's time walk attached to a 5/6 flash body.
Yeah.
That most likely you gained value on beyond that with the Emerge cost, because one of the things to remember is that Emerge allows you sack outlets are generally good.
Right.
Like, because you gain value with them. It's why Birthing Pod was insane. The thing that I do want to point though on this is it has flash. And it having flash means that you can cast this in response to evoke triggers.
Mm.
So, and we talked about this before, but the fact that on your turn, you can kill something and then flash this in with what's it called?
Maldrifter, Shriekmaw.
With a Shriekmaw, you can Shriekmaw and do this. Or you can Maldrifter in this, or you can Ingot Chewer in this. And all that costs 3 to 4 mana.
Mm.
Which isn't the noseless thing. You use it normally to tap their lands down, but sometimes you'll be able to gain, as a 4-drop, get a 5/6 Necrotal.
Well, you have... No. Because you have to do it at instant speed, which means you cast your... Oh, you get the evoke trigger, but you get the full cost. So you pay 2 mana, Shriekmaw costs 5,
right.
And then you pay 2 more to sack it.
So for 4 mana, you get this and a Shriekmaw effect.
I missed that for a second there. I was getting confused.
You're right. It's like the tap 4 lands ability is obviously better during their upkeep. So that's a thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
But in stuff like Birthing Pod decks or Kiki Cord decks, this has an effect that does really cool things with that. And there's another flash one. I forget what it does. It's much less good than this. But this is good by itself, but then also can sometimes just be the nuts and tap their whole team down so you can get in for an attack, plus kill one of their creatures, plus that, or draw 2 cards. Like, the things it can do is pretty strong.
Yeah, that seems sweet.
Yep.
All right, my number 5, yeah?
Yep.
So you don't laugh, because I think that maybe I'm overrating this, but I don't think so. Thalia, Heretic Cathar. 1 white, 2... Yeah, I am. Yeah, what do you think?
I mean, I have a complaint about it, but I see where I'm glad you put it on your list.
One white, two colorless for a 3/2 human soldier with first strike. Creatures and non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. For anybody who's played Modern, you realize that 80% of the lands you play against are non-basics. That even means fetches enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah. No, she could be insane.
I don't think that. Obviously, like, the first thought would be that she's in some sort of a Hate Bears deck, but she's the wrong mana for that because you don't want to pay 3 in that deck. You want to pay 2. But like
2 of these, it's a legendary creature.
If you're
not
playing
tapping
some
out
sort
of
like a Bant deck, like, let's
just Zoo. Like,
yeah, Zoo.
This in Zoo where, like, you're attacking with your, and then you just play this so they can't do anything against you for now on.
If you're playing the 4 Hierarchs, 2 Birds, 3 Vendilion Click, and another good 3 drop deck, so you can play like sweet things on turn 2. This is like such a sweet thing to play on turn 2. If you're on the play and you resolve this on turn 2 against your opponent, they're just like sitting there, and if they don't have a kill spell for it immediately, right, you pretty much just win.
It kind of interacts as a little bit of a mini Blood Moon.
Yeah.
I think now that this card exists almost is a better argument for Blood Moon can go away, but that's a different conversation. Yeah,
this card's pretty busted.
But the one issue I have with this is comparing it to the other Thalia, which is maybe not the smart thing, but this card is very bad against Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like very, for Thalia, like the point of Thalia was you could play this 2/1 that had first strike that was good in general, but then against Lightning Bolt, at best, they want you completely go even, and on a tempo play, they're behind you because you cast a 2/1 that then their Lightning Bolt cased their entire turn because it now costs 2. Whereas this has a little bit of different issues, but the fact that it's interacts with fetches is just bonkers. This card is very good. I'm actually like, I didn't put it on my list because I knew it was on your list.
How did you know?
I saw your list.
Oh, sweet.
I'm a dirty cheater. All right, so my number 5 is maybe a little underrated from people, but I think it might be not as good. I'm a little worried about how good this card is. Eldritch Evolution.
That's only number 5 for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm being a little... This card might just be nuts, and I think in decks like Kiki Cord or anything with Birth... Like, I think any deck that is playing Collected Company but wants to get 4 drops into play, this is the better card than Collected Company in.
Yep.
So it definitely is going to see play. My top 5, I mean, being my top 5 means it's like very good, and I think it's good. I do think there, you know, it might not be as good as people think it is because it is purely just, it has that one or two examples of being useful. I don't think it's going to be as useful as a cheat big things in the play using like Allosaur Rider or any of the Delve creatures. I think that's like cute, but I think that's also too cute. I think your deck then has to play with a bunch of high mana cost things versus just this playing, you know, Kitchen Finks into this, into an Angel that when you gain life, it gets, all your creatures get +1/+1, seems much better.
Right.
Or, you know, something in Kiki Cord into this, into Kiki Jiki, like 2 drop into this, into Kiki Jiki seems really good. So, like, I do think there's usefuls for it, but I think that...
Why Allosaurus Rider? What were you getting at?
That's the, you can exile 2 green cards to put into play.
Yeah, what does that have to do with this card?
You can cheat in a... What's the CMC on Allosaur Rider?
7.
So you can cheat in a 9 drop.
Oh, I see. So you get this in play by exile. Yeah, I mean, that seems loose. But
this, I mean, Allosaur Rider spiked when this card was printed.
Right.
I didn't come up with
it's
that.
Seven,
the internet
it's a $7
did.
Card now.
It was like 0 cents before it was $7. Yeah. And it's gone down because people also realize that's probably not like the thing. Like, you could get Grizzlebrand in play like that. You could get like really good cards that way. But... I'm more interested in 2 drop into Kiki Jiki. And the other thing is this card is terrible against Dramand. This card is terrible against counterspells in general. But because you sacrifice as part of the cost, you can get wrecked.
Yeah.
I think it's fine and I think it's good. I just don't think it's
We'll revisit this on my list later.
Yeah.
So my number 4 is Whispers of Emrakul, which is the Hymn to Turok card. We already talked about it.
Okay. Many times.
Yeah.
For an entire episode, even.
My number 4. What's your number?
4?
Yeah.
Bedlam Reveler.
Oh, you put it on your list.
Yeah.
Oh, fun. That's in my honorable mentions.
Okay. So mine's
like my number 11.
That's the 3/4. So it's Bedlam Reveler is, and this is another cost reduction creature and mechanic. 6 mana, 2 red. Devil Horror. Bedlam Reveler costs 1 less to cast for each instant sorcery card in your graveyard. It has prowess. And when it enters the battlefield, you discard your hand and draw 3 cards, and it's a 3/4.
This card is really interesting.
There's so many, first off, it has the Brick of Text, including a cost reduction mechanic.
Yeah.
It's a 3/4, so it's lightning bolt proof. It draws you into cards that you can then trigger the I think this card is by blatantly a good card.
Yeah, so I mean, I think with the thing to look at here is that it's modern. So this is a 2-drop. It's a 2-mana 3/4. That's pretty much 100% of
it. It's a 2-mana 3/4 with prowess, which is...
Yeah, which is already good.
Which is already very good.
But then when you think about the decks that... So there's a couple uses. If you play this in a traditional deck, like some sort of a Delver deck or like a very heavy spells deck that wants to attack... I mean, it's good on its own. You won't play it on turn two, so it won't be a 2-mana 3/4 on turn two very often. Sometimes, but
I mean,
not.
Just compare this card to Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
Yes, you don't get to keep the cards in your hand, but generally Treasure Cruise Delver decks empty their hand,
right,
and then use Treasure Cruise to draw 3 more cards.
The deck that I like this the most in, I think, is as a sideboard card in Storm. I thought about it as like, could you play a version of Storm that wanted to play?
I don't think that's terrible, but I think this card is just good in any deck that's playing spells.
I mean, I agree. Like, I think this card is good. I was trying to imagine a version of Storm because I know that the list is so tight. But usually, that list, they're like, okay, how many lightning bolts do you play? Do you play any lightning bolts? Like, they're usually kind of moving around trying to figure out like what's the correct. If you have a couple copies of this in Storm, like 2 in your main deck, and you just go off on one of those turns, you cast like 7 spells.
I think this card's good in Storm.
You're just going to attack for 10. Like, and it's just...
Because it draws you into more cards, and discarding in Storm is good. Putting cards in your graveyard is fine.
You can choose when to play it, because often that Storm deck, you'll get to that point where your last 3 cards are lands.
Yeah.
And then you just play this, and it's just good. Like,
no, I think this card's definitely good in Storm. I'm at just the curve of all the stuff Delver is trying to do, and then you have this when your hand is empty. Because the point of Delver is it empties its hand.
Yeah.
With Cataxian Probes and Lightning Bolts, and it has a Pyromancer, young Pyromancer in play, and you're just emptying your spells. This is like, how quick was Treasure Cruise going off in Modern when it was legal? Quick.
Quick.
And it drew you 3 cards. This is Treasure Cruise for 1 more mana in red. You have to discard your hand, but generally that hand in Delver is going to be lands.
Yep.
And so you're getting a 3-4 prowess, and like, I think this card is very good.
Yeah, I like this card a lot.
And we're not even talking about just in burn decks as a 2-of that, like, just as your curve topper. Like,
yeah,
so many things that this card.
Card is just really good. I think it's cool to see. I like it. It's my kind of card. My number 3, Emrakul, the Promised End.
Really?
Yeah.
That's my number 3.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I think that's the first time that's ever happened.
Dead on. Look at that.
Wasn't like number 1. I think we've been right on number 1. Okay.
You have a stronger... We've talked about this card on here actually a lot of times already. But I mean, I think you have a stronger opinion on Emrakul, the Promised End than I do. This card's just really good. I mean, I think for the most part, you're dealing with a 13-13 that you will get to untap with and will probably cost about 7. Like,
I think...
7 or 8.
The place to point to is modernnexus.com did a... Or .net, I think it's .com, did a really good analysis on this card where they played a bunch of games in a gauntlet and compared it to Ulamog. Because Ulamog, the new Ulamog, is always a 2-for... Or a 3-for-1, because you exile 2 of their permanents and you get a 10-10. And they compared, when they played this card, how much better when Nulamog was, and how many cards do you get out of your opponent by casting this card.
Right.
And they found most of the time they were getting between 3 and 4 cards out of their opponent, and they got a 13-13 that was indestructible versus flying trample.
Right.
But protect, like, they have comparable things, like... I do think Emrakul... I mean, the one thing that Emrakul is a little worse is against Infinite Life.
Yeah.
But I also think Mind Slivering a Collected Company player is brutal in general. I think there's a lot of cool things in this. I mean, we talked about this before. The fact that gaining an extra turn... Yes, giving them the extra turn makes it so it's not as insane as historically Emrakul could be. But in reality, this card has protection from... spells that your opponent doesn't have in their hand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, this card, it's always a little hard to rate the really expensive stuff just because it's in Modern, it really only has like one archetype that it can just consistently fits into. But this one, I think, is a little different because of the versatility of its cost.
Yeah, I think for sure it's just going to see play in Tron decks, and I think it has a home in other decks that might be able to play it. I think it could find a home in other decks.
All right. Is both of our number 3. All right, my number 2 and my number 1, they've been battling in my head this whole cast which one that I really believed was my number 1 and my number 2.
Are our top 3 the exact same cards?
No. In fact, I believe they're not at all.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a really interesting episode.
Oh, interesting.
I'm going to put Eldritch Evolution at number 2.
Okay. Well, that was on my list. Okay. Right. So you have one of my two cards you don't have. I wonder which one.
Yeah. And so Eldritch Evolution, just you talked a little bit about it. This has been the most talked about card in the set. I would say that and probably my number one have been the two most talked about. But
My number two is maybe the most expensive card currently in the set that's not a mythic rare.
Yeah. So it's very, 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 like, this... Patrick Chapin was like, play this card when you can in Modern because it's probably going to get banned. Like, that was what he said on his podcast.
Okay.
And I think it's true. Like, I think when you really think about Eldritch Evolution, you have the base function, as you talked about, which is just a really solid tutor.
Yeah.
And there's decks that just win if you use a good tutor. There's not that many good tutors. But then you start thinking about, like, all of the interesting possibilities and the things like... Just like think about like if you want to get interesting, like this just lets you all of those cards that I like, cards like Mirror Superior, cards like Scab Ruinator, where you can't cast them normally. You get to play them as ones or two ofs in your deck. This allows you to. It's a 2-for-1, but like you turn your Birds of Paradise on turn 2 into Scab Ruinator, just into play. That's just it's turn 2. It's very easy.
I don't have to be convinced. Beyond the cheating stuff in the play,
yeah,
like, it's a toolbox card, and I don't have to be convinced for a toolbox card to be good. So it's, like.
It's just generally good. Like, there's just a lot of things you can do with this. I think the exploration of what it's going to take to make this card backbreaking beyond just the normal tutor target for a deck like a Birthing Pod deck is just scratching the surface.
It's better in the decks that play a lot. Like, so Collected Company has kind of taken over the Birthing Pod slot.
Right.
I think this is a card that allows Collected Company decks to kind of move in a slightly different direction, which also lets it take advantage of all of the Emerge cards.
Right.
Like, I think this is a better card in Emerge decks than, obviously, Collected Company, because you're playing with eight drops.
Right.
And sometimes you'll be able to cheat the 8-drop in with this card, or use that 8-drop that you emerged into play to get another big thing. But sometimes you'll just... I think it's really good. I don't disagree with you. Top 5 is... Every single one of these cards on the top 5, I'm just like super hyped about.
Yeah. It's just really good. So that's my number 2. What's your number 2?
Spellqueller.
So funny. You know I love Spellqueller.
Yeah.
Like, you know that that card is like for me just like I just couldn't get enough of it. I was trying to figure out the deck that was going to be played in Modern that I thought was reasonable, and I couldn't come up with one where I was like this fits into an archetype and aside from like a Spirits deck that you're trying to make. You could play this in, like, I guess, red, white, blue, because it's just, like, a good card.
It's a red, white, blue, blue, white decks. I think any blue, white deck that's doing anything at instant speed, like any counter spell deck that's playing white and blue.
Yeah.
Which, if you're a counter spell, you're playing blue, will be playing this card. I don't think they will be playing this card. I think this card is a thing that takes a serious look. You love the black, white.
Tidal Hollow Skeller.
I think the only thing holding this card down is it's. It is gold, which means that specific decks have to be playing. Like, you have to be playing both blue and white. But a flying creature with a counterspell attached to it is really good. Beyond that, the fact that there's cute things you can do to make it permanent. Yes, it comes back, but that's not something that's really...
Sometimes that's not going to matter at all.
Like, the converted mana cost 4 or less matters nil, pretty much, in Modern. There are some problems, as we talked about. For the most part, this will be good.
Against everything.
Like,
I love this card to death. Like I said, it's just something about it when I was trying to figure out, like, where does this fit? Like, what... maybe this should have made my list. If this is, like, this is a card that was made for me, it's exactly my favorite kind of card. I just couldn't... For some reason, I couldn't justify putting it on here. It didn't fit for me. But I do love it. I mean, it's right in my honorable mentions. It's close.
Yeah, no, I think it's super sweet. It bounced around, and like in reality, just it's a 3-mana counterspell with a 2/3 creature attached that in by itself would be a playable card, and this has the tricky things that it can do. I definitely am a fan.
So I'm wondering, because I don't think we have the same number one. I don't think
we might. There's only one card. I'd be surprised if you didn't include this card in your top 10. That's not true.
I would be shocked if you didn't include this card in your top 10. So, but it doesn't seem like we have the same. I went with Tamiyo Field Researcher.
Oh, no. Oh,
completely different.
Splendid Reclamation is mine.
The lands one.
Yeah, yeah. So you go first with Tamiyo.
Okay. It's taken me a couple weeks since this card got spoiled to
it's
really...
It's interesting that one of your complaints about the spirit was it's blue-white, but Tamiyo is a Bant-colored card that only fits in one possible...
But the Spellqueller, while Spellqueller is just a very good card, we haven't seen a Planeswalker at the power level of Tamiyo printed since, Liliana of the Veil, maybe?
You think it's that good? Let me read what this card can do.
This card is so bananas.
All right, so I'll read it, everyone. It's Bant. It's a 4-mana Bant Planeswalker. So green, blue, white, and one colorless. Tamiya Field Researcher. It's a Planeswalker Tamiya, if you guys didn't know that. It comes in with 4 loyalty, which is good. I mean, so it means plussing up to 5.
Yeah.
Choose up to 2 target creatures until your next turn. They draw a card. If they deal damage, they become Ophidians.
Yeah.
Which is a card that creature that did that. -2, tap up the 2 target non-land permanents. They don't. So -2, basically removal spell. 2 permanents don't untap, non-land. And then -7, draw 3 cards, you get an emblem with blah, 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 you win the game.
No, it's you. So he just skipped over each of these things. I'm going to explain why each ability is amazing.
Well, but I mean, like,
Kessler walking on my card.
The -7 is draw 3 cards, you get an emblem. I mean, it's more my point that all ultimates on Planeswalkers,
for the most part,
should just win you the game. Like, this is a different one. This is Omniscience attached to
this. -7, draw 3
recall.
Omniscience. Yeah.
So, which is really good. I'm not saying it's not, but it's like. Like Jace the Mind Sculptor was, and which is really also good, but like the amount of card ultimates on Planeswalkers that didn't win you the game, I can maybe count on my hand.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so check this out. So this is what makes this card so busted. Because I realize, obviously, everybody's going to say, what are you doing, Bateman? You're talking about a 4-drop in Modern being the best card in the set. Like, it's not like me.
I mean, that's you. I mean, I would say that's fine. I mean, this has a removal spell attached. It protects itself. So
think about this. +1. Choose up to 2 target creatures. You can choose one of yours. You can choose one of theirs. Until your next turn, whenever each of those deals combat damage, you draw a card. You could choose one of yours and one of theirs, and if you block their creature and they both die, you still draw 2 cards because they still both dealt combat damage to each other, not a player.
Sure.
You get to choose the optionality of the first ability, which means that Tamiyo comes down as a +1 on 5 loyalty, essentially, to for them to do nothing.
And pretty much either guarantees you draw a card or guarantees they don't do damage.
If you're in a deck that you have the ability to put it on your own creatures, it's draw 2. If you don't and you're just sitting there protecting yourself, okay, great. Attack Tamiyo, attack me. I'll just draw 2 off of it. And chances are she's still alive because she's at 5. So they would have to have the ability to get through with enough beef for you to like that. That is so good. Next.
Yeah, I'm not saying she's not good.
-2, just, tap up to 2 target non-land permanents. They don't untap during their controller's next and tap step. Like, talk about a protection spell. 2. And it's not like target permanent doesn't untap.
It's
tap
+1,
2 creatures.
It's +1. You're going to come out ahead unless you're not. And then it's -2. Make sure you're... And then she's protected.
And then you get to untap and figure out a way
They would have to have like 4 creatures.
Yeah. This card's outrageous. -7 is Ancestral Recall attached to Omniscience. And mind you, she comes down, if you plus her up when the turn she comes down, she's coming down on 5 mana. This means that 3 turns after you play Tamiyo, you get to ultimate Tamiyo. And her abilities are so good, the likelihood of them getting her off the table, unless they have a kill, a Planeswalker spell, or like a bolt and something, very unlikely. I think this
and
card...
And it's the colors that want all these effects. Tamiyo's... Yeah, I'll give you more credit than
I think
gave
this
you
card,
when you first...
I think this card might break Modern. I'm not kidding. I think this and Eldritch Evolution both have...
Gonna break Modern?
I think this card may make an archetype. Like, it might make...
Bant playable?
Like a Bant control
deck. I could definitely see it making an archetype playable. That I don't have any... Which, by the way, Spellcaller is really good in that deck with her.
Yeah, Spellcaller is really good.
Turn 3, Spellcaller, turn 4, Tamiyo is like...
It's also very clear
because you don't have a 2-3 flyer and they don't have the spell in their hand that might have dealt with Tamiyo.
Yeah, it's also it's clear that for Standard they were designed to play against each other. Go ahead. What do you got?
My #1? Oh, the land. If I were to pick a third card from the 2 cards you said that might break Modern, it's Splendid Reclamation. I mean, like, even if that combo doesn't exist yet, like, this is obviously a nutso card.
Yeah.
You can get 10 mana and 10 land into play for 4 mana with this card. Not a lot. Like, beyond, like, the cuteness of what I want to do with Hedron Crab, where I mill myself until I get the cast this card and then mill my opponent for the 60 cards that they have in their deck and walk away happy. Just, like, as a sideboard card in decks that generally need this kind of card, which is, you know, as a one of in Scapeshift, as a one of, or a completely different version of Scapeshift, a Dredshift deck where you're milling yourself and you're using all the good card filtering decks to put cards into your deck, your graveyard, and you just cast this and win.
Did you just say Dredshift? Is that a deck?
I did.
Did you just make that up on the spot?
Yeah. 100%. Claiming it now, Dredshift. Everyone get on board.
And 1% of the metagame at Grand Prix Albuquerque is this deck called Dredshift.
Well, I mean, okay. Beyond anything, this Invalicode is really good.
Yeah.
Like, green and red have some of the best dredge ability. Make it Jund. Put some discard in there. Imagine Jund being able to play this card where, like, you're just milling yourself, you're just dredging, you get stuff in your graveyard, and you cast this, and you just...
Yeah.
Like, this card is really good. And that's with the combos that exist now. Like, every single land-based combo situation they print, for now on, you can look this card up as a graveyard. In it. Like, this card is very good.
I think this card is good. I think...
I agree with you that your top two...
Eldritch and Tamiyo?
Yeah, plus this are the three cards that... Well, no. I don't know about Tamiyo. I think Eldritch Evolution...
I love that Tamiyo's not on your list. That blows my mind.
Eldritch Evolution and this card and some of the Emerge cards are my like picks for these could be banned in Modern without me being surprised at all.
Yeah, I think... I mean, Tamiyo, it seems hard to get banned. Eldritch Evolution, I think, will almost assuredly be banned eventually. It's just... It's hard for me to imagine.
So the problem with Tamiyo is it's three mana. So there's only going to be... maybe two different versions of decks that I'll see play in.
You mean three colors?
Yeah. Sorry, not three mana. So like, when it comes down to it, that's always just a little bit of a safer thing. And if Tamiyo makes a deck archetype, it's going to be fine. I don't think Tamiyo is going to be banned.
No, me either.
But I do think, because it's a format, like there are spells that kill planeswalkers that don't do damage. Like there are ways to deal with Tamiyo. Eldritch Moon is a card that's possibly bannable. This card is a card that might, like, this is a combo enabler, purely what it is. But I think it's a combo enabler that already has three homes that I can think of.
Right.
And that doesn't include all the things that it could do in the future. It doesn't even get into the fact that it's also a ramp card that's nutso.
Right.
Like, with fetch lands, just like, you're playing just your fetch mana blaze. On turn four, you get the three fetches you use to get to that point back. You just mana to get the seven mana.
I think the reason I didn't put it on my list, it's on my honorable mentions, like, you know, the 20 or so other cards that I had written down. The reason I didn't make it for me was just I was like, you know, Scapeshift is really, really good. Scapeshift fits into one deck, and this is kind of, if you're trying to get like a big landfall trigger or something like that, this, I can see where you're going with this, that it lets you really ramp, but it just doesn't feel to me like a card that would have a massive impact on multiple decks, but maybe a small impact on one archetype.
I guess, and you kind of, I mean, look, Tamiyo is a similar card, but this is a card that I can see decks existing immediately for, where some of the other cards I think are a little bit more speculative.
Yeah, it's
and
fair.
Like, and a guaranteed lock in the Modern for me weighs a little bit heavier on my list than a maybe lock.
Right. That's fair. I think we were going to try to do a little battle top five.
I don't think we have time.
I don't think we have time. But let's.
But do you want to just talk about some of your honorable mentions?
Rattle off one or two of them real quick. You go ahead first.
So, I mean, like, a quick one that, like, don't even have to say anything. There's just one deck, Gaia Reach Sanctum, which is the each player draws a card and then discards a card.
Yeah.
Just goes in the Upsell Turns deck as a one of. There's no reason not to play it. It's good.
Yeah, that card's good. Liliana the Last Hope. I mean, I considered putting it on. Liliana is cool. The issue with Liliana is in Modern, when would you ever play this that you weren't going to play the other Liliana?
Like, I think the creature Liliana and Liliana the Veil are just always better in any situation that this card would be okay.
So that was why that one didn't make it for me.
Sigarda's Aid. Which is the one white equipment get flash. So the one reason I like this card is that the Sword of Feast and Famine is really good in decks that want to do stuff at instant speed.
Yeah.
And the big problem is it's this big sorcery speed clunky thing in your deck. This allows you to cast it onto a creature at the end of your opponent's turn, and then from that point on, hold on, counter magic, and play spells, untap your lands, have counter magic. Like, I think this card is very good.
I wish this card said...
That deck. And I don't know how good that deck is, but it's cute.
I wish that this card said, when you cast Sigarda's Aid, you may pay two more mana if you do search your library for an equipment and put it into your hand. I wish you could pay it for three and search. Because right now, it's one of those cards that's an enabler, but it's a do-nothing card otherwise.
Sure.
Which is why it was hard for me to put it on.
I agree, and that's the problem with it.
Selfless Spirit is a card that I think isn't getting talked about enough. One white, one colorless, 2/1 flying spirit.
Oh, the indestructible. I thought that was actually going to be on your list.
Sacrifice selfless spirit creatures you control gain indestructible till end of turn. It's really good because the 3-mana elephant for 3 that does the same thing has always been like that fringe. Can I play this in my creature decks as just like a one of? The issue with that card was always that obviously it's green and white, and it's a three mana 3/3 that can get bolted. This is better. It's a 2/1 flyer for 2. It just curves out before your beefy 3-drop you want to protect.
You going down on 1 mana to a lightning bolt on this card is fine, and they have to get rid of it with lightning bolt before they can get rid of anything else. I definitely think it's serviceable.
Card's good.
Upsubstantiate.
Yeah, card's really
which
cool.
Which is 1 blue, 1 colorless, return target spell or creature to its owner's hand. I think it's really close. I think Remand's better, but I think if you want extra Remands, I think this is better in Delver decks than something maybe like Mana Leak, because the thing that people don't remember is one of the problems with Remand is you counter their Tarmogoyf and they just cast it on turn 4. This allows you to bounce their Tarmogoyf at the end of their turn.
Yeah.
Versus them being having a chance to recast it. And just that pure factor. Obviously, Remand is better because drawing a card is better than not. But this card is obviously a very useful tool. And that we'll see play in Modern.
I think my last... I'll reference the collective cards. I'll just reference the optionality of all of the Escalate cards. The few that really jumped out at me were Collective Defiance, Collective Effort, and Collective Brutality. I think those are the three.
The alternate costs. Escalate cost.
Yeah, you can discard cards for the black one. You can tap creatures for the white one.
I think their cost reduction mechanic.
I think the red one. The red one you just have to pay mana for. But I mean, the red one is interesting. The red one, target player discards all cards in his or her hand, then draws that many cards. 4 damage to a creature or 3 damage to an opponent. I mean.
I think that's fine. I think that's a serviceable card. I think that could be easily a one of in mono red burn decks or even Naya burn decks. Like I don't think that you're crazy for saying that card will see some play.
I think they're all good, and then I think the last card I'll reference, and I'm confused by this card because it's a mythic. Green black for a 2/2 trample called Grim Flare. When it deals combat damage to a player, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put any number of them in your graveyard and the rest on top of your library in order.
This card.
It gets +2/+2 if you have Delirium. It's just weird, like it's one of those things where you're like, if I was going to build some sort of a cool or clever kind of more aggressive bug deck, I could see wanting to do this. It helps enable Delirium.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You can get away with some interesting stuff. But
isn't Putrid Leech just better? I mean, I guess the putting stuff in your graveyard is good. It's fine.
It's a weird card.
I don't think it deserves to be mythic. I think that's my problem with it. It doesn't make sense.
This card is awesome in my Jund deck in Highlander.
Sure.
But that's pretty much it.
Right. I have 2 more cards. They're pretty quick. One is Imprisoned in the Moon, which is the blue. Purely from this is effect that doesn't exist and mono... modern deck, like Merfolk, mono blue decks will play this as a sideboard card, period, forever, because it can kill anything.
Yep.
And they need, like, Merfolk needs a answer to stuff.
Yep.
Same, like, they're playing Hercule's Recall, which is bad against Affinity, but they're playing it because it's the only way they can fight Affinity. There's other decks like that. This is a card that helps them do that. And then last but not least is Oath of Liliana.
Yep.
And purely from a perspective of this is, I think, one of the better oaths.
Yeah.
Because it protects the Planeswalker with zombies that comes into play, and the actual effect on the card is completely serviceable. 3 mana. Edict effect.
Super good.
It's fine. So that's it for this week's episode. We went long, obviously, because it's a review episode. So we won't probably do... I think we did a little bit of our end of episode.
Oh, we can rant later.
We can do that later.
We'll rant about Comic-Con on the next episode.
Yeah. So, thanks, guys, for listening. Sorry we took the break off. I don't know. I think I mentioned it, but I've been in 9 cities in 12 days. Like my life has been hectic over the last 2 weeks. We were at Comic-Con last week, so it was really hard. The week before, I helped my girlfriend move to Atlanta. Like everything is kind of, these last 2 weeks were kind of we need to take a break. We're back to our normal schedule.
We've been coordinating some stuff, so there'll be very cool things happening very soon. We've been talking about it. So you heard at the beginning of the episode, the guys with DMTW, we actually will have a product available, our first product available, the playmat. So we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, but be sure to check that out. Otherwise, if you want to find us on Twitter, at the MMCast, find me personally, Ben Bateman Media, Kess at Kess Wiley, and of course the Command Zone. You can find those guys at CommandCast.
And on RocketJump.com. You can find pretty much anywhere at the MMCast. Make sure to check our YouTube channel. Please subscribe, guys. We're trying to push that a little bit harder. We are releasing video content of each of the episodes when we release them. Thanks to our friend Mike Clary.
Yep.
He's swell. Thanks to our intern. She's been sitting quietly listening to us this whole time. thanks, guys, for listening. We're glad to be back. I'm super excited, super hyped. The set's super deep in a very interesting way.
Sweet.
I think people are underwriting it. Buy boxes. Oh, last thing. Well, I guess it already went up, but it's too late. But I would have said Ishkana, the Spider Lord, like the mythic standout for standard.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with this podcast, but that card is nuts.
Card is sweet.
But it's just not a modern card.
I like Ishkana.
It's not nowhere on my list, but that card is sweet. It'll be a $20 mythic by the end of next week.
Yep.
Oh, Pro Tour. It's cool. All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.